At this point, we're going to review the order of the agenda. Do any members of the board want to change the order of the agenda? Okay, then we will proceed with the agenda as presented by staff. How about public comments? Is there anyone from the community that would like to address the board?
Good evening. My name is Ron Arnoldson. I'd like to comment Mr. Brown on some of his comments that he made at his council meeting two meetings ago concerning this this board. And I think he was right on. I think the language you use is right on. And I think you're the only person other than Mr. Hill that's been involved in this meeting, knows what's going on. Your other three constituents have got their heads somewhere. I don't know. But they're condemning everyone, and they don't know anything about the board. So thank you, Mr. Brown, for your participation, your comments, and your concern.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and just as I told you 2 weeks ago, you're not going to stop hearing about three particular items. One, the Jenkins communications need to be on your website. Mr. Sweet actually asked me to scan a copy of the censure memo, I call it, a communication from Mr. Jenkins that he presented the night Mayor Hill was censured by your board. And I did. I scanned it and sent it to him, and it's still not on your website. Second thing, Mr. Scholes admitted to doing the very thing that Jim Hill was accused of. Mr. Scholes needs to be investigated with the same vigor as was the effort in Mr. Hill's investigation. The third thing, rescind the censure. There is no empirical evidence to warrant a censure of Jim Hill. Another thing I'd like to speak about that's not on this agenda and has me very concerned, and I think your ratepayers would be concerned too if they were all paying attention. Mayor Hill gave a comprehensive report on a whiteboard, on a flip chart, showing accounting errors. There's a mystery in where some $800,000+ is. That was to come back to your board. Paul Karp was here last meeting 2 weeks ago. He was happy to announce that Amy Simpson is back in the office and expected her to maybe find the money. There should be a status report of whether or not Amy's found the money or anybody else in that office has found the money. Or what do we think it is? Because the longer it goes unaccounted for, the more mysterious it becomes. And I don't really want to say what I'm thinking about that, but Mr. Huebner's gone, and we don't know where the money is.
Anyone else?
Hi, Colin Kubel. I would just like to ask a direct question. This board has, we have brought several items to this board many times. The complaint in regards to Chair Scholes, the money, where it's at, things like that. And things like this that don't get put on the website, the Jenkins letter, things like that, we hear nothing. Why hasn't it been done? And we'd like an answer why it has not been done. Give us the answer. Give us the public the answer of why those things have not been done, and it's just status quo. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close public comment, bring it back to the board. Let's move on to consent agenda. We have three items on consent. We have the approval of warrants, which is 5A. 5B is approval of minutes from the meeting November 1st. And 5C is notice of rotation of district board meeting location. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent?
I didn't have a chance to check all the items. Are there any warrants regarding legal fees that I missed?
Staff?
I didn't see any in the other one. I haven't checked the new one here.
I just assumed there were some, and I didn't see them. So
no, I don't believe there are.
Thank you for that. Nothing more, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Karen?
No, I don't want to pull anything.
Do any members of the community would like to address the consent agenda tonight?
Julie Tacker again. I can't help notice Mr. Sweet's $15,000 warrant. Is there a revised copy? Is there one for the public too, by the way?
They are on at the table.
Oh, we got it.
It's a very minor.
I got here before the table. And can you maybe say what it is?
There was just a typo on the payroll, and it was a $300 error.
Error. Okay.
Just like a speaking error.
Those happen.
Okay. Error, not arrow.
They do. The other warrant that I notice is a couple of them. Fay Russo's accounting services, $3,500. There is a warrant, I can't find it right now, for staffing. And I'm hopeful that these are the last time we see these. Since Amy Simpson is back, we should not be incurring extra cost. As long as we are, that's what's got me curious. I see in some communication with Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp that it appears that Mario, I don't remember Mario's last name, apparently he's still in the office. Ms. Simpson is copied. She's in the office. I see Mary is here. I assume she's still in the office. Ms. Russo's getting paid. That's more administration. Some great things should be getting done with that many people on board, including putting things on the website or getting caught up. So either these expenses need to stop or we should see some terrific work product in leaps and bounds getting caught up.
Is there anyone else? See no one come forward. I'm going to close it to the program. Consent agenda. Someone prepared to make a motion on these
items? Yes, I'll make a motion. We approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
And amended, and presented and amended.
Okay, and the second okay with the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Still roll call.
Yes. Director White.
Yes.
Director Brown.
Yes.
Chairman Schultz.
Yes, thank you. We're going to move on to action items. This is item number 6, actually 6A. Which is the redundancy project. So let me turn this over to staff for a staff report.
Thank you, Chairman Schultz. The item before us tonight is what we are calling Technical Memo 7, which is an alternative in regards to production for recycled water. What has happened is while the redundancy project has been under design, there's also been a project which the board has been supportive of called the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. It became apparent through the earlier stages of the process of the discussions between the two projects that there might be advantages to the RGSP, the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, to creating a different type of process at our plant. That process we'll refer to as the MVR process, which is a membrane treatment. And that, so we asked that Kennedy Jenks do that analysis to give us an answer about what that might involve. As you can tell, what we've discovered through the staff report reveals that the project is approximately $16 million more than the original redundancy project we were contemplating, and the annual operating costs were about $400,000 more each year. So
We brought this before the RGSP stakeholders group, and they thought that they would like a chance to further review this before we just say we're not going to do this, and that so the recommendation tonight is to refer to the executive committee of this board, which would be the city managers of each city and the manager of the Oceano Community Services District, for further review, and that they take a look and at various options, including this, and make a recommendation back. So it's an interesting relationship between the agencies regarding this is interesting in that is this a water project? Is this a wastewater treatment project? Or is it some combination of both? And I think that the governance on that hasn't really been settled yet, and I think it's a good time to probably initiate those discussions. If there's any, we have with us tonight John Wyckoff with Kennedy Jenks, who is going to present his results of this study. And with that, I'll introduce Mr. Wyckoff, okay. And he will present what he's determined. And if we could probably hold questions till his presentation is done, it'd probably help him with consistency on the presentation.
Okay, very good. Mr. Wyckoff.
Yes, directors and Mr. Chairman. As Rick said, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm with Kennedy Jenks Consultants. We're working on the redundancy project, the design of it. Actually, we've been on hold for that design portion of the project. We've been doing permitting and other ancillary things so far. Got the survey and the geotech all done. But we were asked to do this tech memo number 7 to compare an MBR process to what was originally slated for the redundancy project. So basically, tech memo 7 is entitled Alternatives for Reduction of Recycled Water, which the MBR would allow you to do, but it's a memo that compares two alternatives. One alternative is called the tripping filter secondary clarifier alternative, which was the original redundancy project alternative. And the second is the full-scale MBR alternative. And as Rick mentioned also, this was actually done contemplating the district joining in on the regional groundwater sustainability project, and that there might be some advantage of an MBR with that project. If you had an MBR, since we were going to be improving your biological process, the plant anyway as part of the redundancy project, maybe we could upgrade it a little more than what we were going to do, and it would help out with the redundancy project, and we're going to see if it would be cost-effective. One thing that's important to remember, the main goal of the redundancy project is to provide a backup for your secondary process. Right now, all you have is a fixed-form reactor for biological treatment. It needs some maintenance, and if you take it down, you won't be able to meet your discharge requirements. So the redundancy project will put in a second our backup biological process to allow you to do the maintenance on that fixed room reactor and keep it in operation for a long period of time. So alternative one, as I said, is that they add the tripping filter. It's keep the tripping filter and add an activated sludge between the tripping filter and secondary clarifiers. Also add an additional secondary clarifier for backup of that process. This alternative one will meet the discharge requirements that you have right now for your ocean discharge, which is 40-40, 40 BOD, 40 suspended solids. We're planning on designing this for 25-25, considering that in the future, the regional board may lower your requirements to 30-30. So we designed it for 25-25 at this point. And so it really provides redundancy. Alternative two, the MBR project, would be to construct a brand new MBR facility and then eliminate the tripping filter completely and just have the MBR. The MBR would provide redundancy. We'd have 3 trains through the MBR, so you could take out 1 train and keep 2 in service if you need to do maintenance. The real advantage of the MBR process is it provides a higher quality effluent. Like I said, we're designing the alternative one for 25-25, 25 BOD, 25 suspended solids. The MBR process would probably likely be able to produce a 2-2, 2 BOD and 2 suspended solids. It would produce water that would meet Title 22 unrestricted use requirements, except for disinfection. That's had tacked on to the end. But it would filter the water, provide a turbidity of less than 2, and provide what you could use for reclaimed water. But that's what you would need in order to inject water in the ground. You'd have to at least meet those requirements. At this point, nobody really knows what your requirements are going to be because you haven't had that permitted yet. But based on our experience doing this kind of work, it's a minimum of Title 22. Most likely, you have to go to a higher level of treatment, probably removal of TDS, which may mean RO, after this kind of process. So that's what your, what is called the FAT, the full advanced treatment facility. That's the kind of things it would have. If you did the MBR, the FAT could have less things in it because you already have a filtered effluent for your flow. Now, FISBL is another story, but it would help out. So we're looking at, if we did that now, how would that help? And as Rick, it really came down to economics. As Rick mentioned, it's $16 million premium in capital costs for the MBR process right now. So at $16 million you have to come up with, and it's an additional $400,000 a year for operation of that facility. And because we're uncertain of when this groundwater sustainability program is going to happen, if the district went ahead with the MBR process, you could have many years of paying an extra $400,000 and a lot of burden on the ratepayer. So based on that and based on the fact that doing the MBR process may mean somewhat of a delay in the design, get things worked out to get that part of the process going, it would delay the redundancy project a little bit longer. And the redundancy project's been delayed for many years. We think it's the district is at risk if something happens to the fixed-term reactor, and it's prudent to get a project underway going right now. So based on those things, our recommendation is to go with the alternative one, which is the drifting filter secondary clarifier project, the least expensive project right now. And then in the future, you can look at doing additional treatment if you need to, or probably the FAT a facility would do all the additional treatment that's required when you had more people that would help be funding that facility. Some things that could be done to the facility for less money than $16 million, if this isn't in the technical memo, but it could be done to improve the effluent. One thing that the FAT facility like to see is nitrogen removal. And that could be done for a smaller amount of money than $16 million in preparation of having the FAT facility in the future. But it would be a little bit extra money. We figure maybe about $4 million for your facility. But it could be phased so we could do about $1.5 million now and maybe $2.5 million in the future. So anyway, our recommendation is the alternative one at this point. I could go into a little bit more on what the advantages of MBR are if you want me to, but or how it works, how the process works, if you're interested. That's my report for now.
Very good. Thank you. Do any board members have any questions?
I do, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Okay. Forgive me if I'm asking things that have already been asked, but it's been a while since I've sat in this chair, so.
Okay.
The phase one is basically the basic redundancy project is what you're recommending.
The alternative one, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the $16 million possibly phased-in project is in addition to?
Not really. That would be the $16 million is not in addition to. That is in place of. So if we did the alternative two, it would be $16 million more than alternative one. If you did alternative, you upgraded the alternative one to the same treatment as alternative two in the future, that may cost a little more than $16 million.
I guess what I'm trying to understand is we have to do the basic redundancy project, right?
Well, yeah, the regional board has said you had to do it.
Well, I'm stating the obvious. I'm known as Captain Obvious. So so the next part is I guess I'm still trying to get clarification. So we do the basic redundancy project. What's the idea behind doing this secondary treatment that would get you to BODs of, what you say, 25 or?
Well, what we're going to do now is either 25. The BOD's a 2 would be the MBR process. And the idea was we were looking to see if it was more economical for the district to go to a higher level treatment now or wait and have it the higher level treatment be provided by the FAT later on.
So it was basically a timing issue of when do we do it.
Right, when we do it, and who pays for it. Because right now, there's any agreements, like anybody to pay for it. So if it was done now by the district would pay for all of it. And it would be an advantage for the entire Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. It would be a real advantage for them to have this done here with the district, but they're not paying for it. You are.
Right. Okay, I appreciate the clarification. The other question I have is regarding cost. And, Rick, I don't know if you can answer this, having been on the job again for a short period of time, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's the basic redundancy project going to cost, additional cost per ratepayer? And did you guys go through any sort of analysis as to this?
The project was in the rate study, and the rates have been adopted for that. That project that was evaluated in the rate study was $19 million. What we're seeing in the redundancy project at this point is it's about $23 million. Now, there's some difference in today's dollars to years ago dollars. What I'm suggesting as a secondary part of that is that we update that financial plan, make sure we're on schedule for this size project. And if, in fact, we change the project, then we definitely need to update the financial plan to see what the rate increase would be associated with any change to the project.
And currently, what kind of money is reserved for the project?
There is a project to fund through bonds, a $19 million project.
But so that would mean there's no actual reserve right now to help pay for that project.
There are funds in reserve there's what we are calling the LEAF, and there's about $2.5 million in LEAF presently, and there's cash balance of the district of approximately another $2 million. That money was accounted for within the financial plan, and a good share of that is to go towards this project as a beginning balance to the project.
And do we know, given that we haven't had our audits up to date, that money's still there?
We know the cash balances are there, so those cash balances are present.
So I apologize to the other board members for asking what are probably basic questions. But so you have $19 million cost, of which you have approximately $2.5 million that you can dedicate.
I'd say that's not exactly right. It's probably more like $3 or $4 million we can dedicate.
Yeah, but we have to have, even if we do the redundancy project, we still have to have some sort of reserve.
Certainly.
So you can't really count it at $4.5 million.
No, no. But that's assuming that the cash balance continues to grow at a rate as projected within the financial plan that's presently available.
Okay. And then just again to reiterate, you're recommending basically you looked at this option and at the current time it's not recommended.
It's not recommended for the district to go with the MBR, the alternative two. It's recommended to go with the TEFC-SC project, which is a Trippy Filter Secondary Clarifier, the original project.
Okay, great. I appreciate your clarification and your latitude. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Aaron?
I don't have any questions. I have comments later.
So, Rick, maybe you can just clarify, and those are really good questions, Tim, and that we had talked about a lot of that in previous meetings. So I just want to be clear. It looks like the staff is recommending something a little different than what Mr. Wyckoff is recommending. So I want to make sure we're clear on what the staff's recommendation is at this time.
Yeah. Mr. Wyckoff is recommending something that if I was in Mr. Wyckoff's shoes, I'd be recommending. Because he's looking at the project that's solely the district's responsibility. And I agree that that's a great approach. What we have here, though, is three agencies that also stand to benefit from our GSP project. And what the amount of that benefit, how that participation should occur, and to what level that participation should occur, those discussions haven't happened yet. If tonight you tell us that we just want to go with the original project, then that will be the end of that discussion, as far as we're concerned. I'm afraid that probably won't be the end of the discussion, but it's a simple answer, and I'm not sure that the simple answer in this case is going to get us a final answer, because I think you're going to go back and your councils are have some enthusiasm for the RGSP project, and they'd like to see how that's all going to fit together and what the district's role is in that.
So based on what the staff's recommendation is, you're basically to direct the technical consultants to meet with the executive committee to evaluate alternatives and recommend an alternative to the district. And so that also would include a financial plan. How much time do you think that would take?
What I'd like to do is get at least some preliminary work done, get that done by mid-January. There's an alternative which Mr. Wyckoff referred to, and it may be a middle ground. We do not have the funding in our financial plan mm-hmm. for that middle ground, and that's a nitrate removal project, which could be built within the existing project, as he said, which would have a nominal first step of $1.5 million. I mean, $1.5 million is still a lot to me, but when you consider it as $1.5 million of a $23 million project, maybe that's something that your local agencies believe the district should be participating in. One problem with the MBR project, as Mr. Wyckoff said, is we could be producing very good water to dump in our original discharge with no benefit to the basin until the RGSP project's done. So that stops making okay. a lot of sense. If we had $1.5 million expenditure with another $2.5 million that would come when the RGSP project comes along, still $1.5 million I don't want to spend, but it starts yeah. to make a little more sense.
So that's sort of an alternative 1A.
Yeah, which we haven't. We yeah. basically cooked this up in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. Okay. So we don't have a full report on that. We're asking them to look at that because when we saw the numbers and we started having discussions with the RGSP stakeholders, they were not happy with. They wanted something else, so we're trying to come up
Can
with
I ask
something.
A follow-up question?
Yeah.
I guess what I'm concerned about. I'm just a simple guy, but it seems like it's not cost-effective now. What is sending it to the city managers and all that group? How's that going to change, other than the fact that they're enthusiastic about groundwater recharge, which we clearly need? But I mean, it has to be balanced against the cost. So, I understand the enthusiasm for wanting to do it, but there's some harsh realities we have to deal with.
Well, I think one thing we might consider is this other alternative and how that happens. And if it's $1.5 million, do the cities then decide that maybe they want to pay that over in a bonded scenario? So $1.5 million would be about $150,000 a year over a 30-year bond.
And the logic would be that the cities would get groundwater recharge that they wouldn't normally get.
The cities would get a better positioned water to go into this FAT facility if they choose to go that way.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think so the timing question I had asked was, you know, if we pursue that, will that have any consequences with respect to, obviously, you know, the base project is a directive?
It delays the base project a little bit longer. We've been on hold for the last 2 years, and it's longer. And the only real, I think, problem here is you have your coastal permit that has some deadlines in it that you need to make, you know, get the plans to the Coastal Commission in a certain amount of time and things like that. So we do need to get moving on that project.
Okay.
Yeah. Can any?
Do you remember the time frame, John?
I think it's. I don't really remember right off the top of my head, but it's like in 2 years they want to see the 90% plans, and so we have a little bit of time. We figure it's take 1 year for design.
So
we have.
As we see, dancing takes time, and so we want to make sure that we don't continue to dance for another year and say, "Oh my God, what are we going to do here?" So I think that this is a question that we're going to want a pretty quick answer to, or
yes.
it delays our project. I don't think we really want to stand for that. What's nice about this alternative is it makes some $1.5 million worth of changes, but the processes are essentially the same as the processes in the original project. They're a little bigger. The aeration basins are a little bigger. They required a little bit more air input capacity, but it's essentially the same processes.
Right. Just okay. going a little farther, what happens is we're We generally are right now designed to reduce carbon and BOD and the effluent. In order to reduce nitrogen, we have to have a longer detention time, so a little bigger basins and more air, because the process takes air. And we also have to add a third on each train, an extra little basin that's called an anoxic basin, where there's no air, but we do what's called denitrification, which allows the nitrates you produce in the nitrification process, that converts it to nitrogen gas, which goes up in the air, and since air is 60% nitrogen gas anyway, we sort of lose it in the air. So that's what we need to do. We'll put those extra basin in and make the other basins a little larger with a little more air.
Okay. Thank you both.
Okay.
Let me know, open this up to the public and see if there's anyone that would like to address this item.
Julie Tacker again. I have a lot of notes, John, if you'll please give me some.
Excuse me?
I have a lot of notes. I hope you give me some latitude.
Okay.
July 5th, your board approved this tech memo not to exceed $28,000. I'd like to know what the cost of the memo was. Because anyone who knows anything about a membrane bioreactor knows this was a long shot and really unnecessary because it was going to be way too expensive. The way this was characterized in the staff report is that it's $16 million more. There's some hiccup with the $19 million. Now it's $23 million plus $16 million. Let's just say it out loud. It's $39 million to build that project. And then in some of these tables, there's contingency, and it's $42 million. These are real dollars for your real ratepayers. The idea that you go back or recommend that your staff go back to the executive committee, there is no executive committee. That was a recommendation by Mayor Scholes. There was no vote by your board to have an executive committee be part of your decision-making process. This district needs autonomy. You are not a water purveyor. The RGSP partners are not the wastewater providers. So let them do whatever rigmarole they want to do. They should have paid for this report. You are also paying $127,000 towards the EIR. You shouldn't have paid a cent for it. It's their EIR. The time value of money is not $2 million a year. So something is wrong in the original calculation for the rate study. I'd like that explained. I suppose I can go back and look at the rate study and the work that Kennedy Jenks did at the time, but that needs to be explained. It's not $2 million a year, and if it is $2 million a year, next year is another $2 million. The year after that, and after that, and after that. And of course, it's not going to be like that. So somebody needs to clarify what happened. Because now you're going to have to go back through the 218 process to your ratepayers, and you already doubled their rates for the $19 million project. Double over 10 years. The coastal development permit is up next December. You do have milestones. It's all been put on hold because the CEQA process was truncated by the idea that you could go back to 2009 and use old CEQA, and that isn't adequate for the funding providers. What's also not going to be adequate for the funding providers is an audit that's this late, $800,000 that's missing. If you don't have your books in order and your ducks in a row, you're not going to get funding. So I would like to see an actual accounting of what the rate increase has brought so far. How much of that was spent on lawyers in the last year, and how much of that was supposed to go to redundancy? Very lastly, the governance structure should have been hammered out first, before you ever entered down this path. The engineers, they just keep engineering. They will engineer it after you figure out who's going to pay for it. And clean water is paid for by water users, not clean water for drinking, not the sanitation district. Thank you for the extra time.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnold, since my comments are, I think if you're going to have an executive committee, I think it would be more advantageous to have somebody from different sanitation districts that would be providing information. They're more capable of giving you information because they know more about sanitation. I don't know that your city managers are that much of a help as far as a committee. And so... And I think there's a conflict there. So if I were to ask for an executive committee, it would be from like somebody like Santa Maria's sanitation people, maybe San Luis's sanitation people, get some input there. I really think that's a mistake to try to use our own city people. The other thing is if you're going to dream, why don't you dream about changing the whole aspect of this district, move it someplace else. If we're going to go in to get a better plant, more state-of-the-art, and get it out of the coastal zone, get it out of the flood zone. Let's, if we're, you know, dreaming big, let's dream and see if we can move it someplace where it's not going to have all the ramifications of the Coastal Committee and et cetera that it does.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public and bring it back. Okay. Any discussion?
I apologize again. I'm going to be doing this all night.
Don't apologize.
Don't apologize.
That's why you're up here.
So what's the story with this executive committee? Is there actually a formalized executive committee that was voted on, and what's their expertise in making the decision that we need to make?
My understanding is the executive committee was not voted on. It was just suggested as a way to examine governance issues amongst our member agencies. So we had a meeting. What makes this group unique is they are also the water providers in this area within our district boundaries. So they would have the other side of whatever this project is. So they are interested in having some say in regards to what level of treatment we have in regards to the RGSP project.
Okay, so my follow-up question would be, have they been in the loop so far?
Yes, they have been in the loop as far as the RGSP as far as the RGSP projects, they certainly have, and they've also been in the loop. Yes, they have.
Thanks
I'll
for that.
Say that.
I like your answer. So I guess I would just say this. This is my personal opinion and my opinion only. That we are the decision-making body, and I think we should make a decision. I'm all for having them comment, and if they're in the loop, they should have time to comment why they think we should maybe do some other option. But we're clearly under the gun to some degree, and I'd like to see this move forward. We're not so far down the road that if we get some stop sign from one of the parties that we couldn't say, well, wait a minute, we got to rethink this. I think ultimately we need to start moving forward. This is long in coming, and it's been way too long, and so I'm not going to recommend that we send it to spend time with some phantom executive committee, and rather ask the cities that are involved to comment on our action tonight to see if they have any concerns they need to be addressed, but I'm ready to move forward with a basic project.
Thanks for those comments, and I would agree. I am in agreement. It was a suggestion, executive committee, and I'm glad staff reached out to them, so they at least as a courtesy. So I think at the end we should talk about how we formalize the executive committee. Sounds good. Okay.
Hello?
Karen?
Well, I don't see why in middle of November when nothing happens until January, February, we can't wait for 2 or 3 months to see what this other RGSP study comes out with. Now, I'm coming from Oceana where we don't need water. Okay. So do we ever play with the water redundancy program? I'm not sure. And we also bring in state water, which makes the whole basin have better water. But I still think if we could, if it's just a matter of, say, till January or February when these people come back with some other comment, and it's us on the other side of us making the comments, I think we could wait that long. And that would be my only thinking, to bring it back in 3 months, say, or 4 months, February. We've been, has the redundancy program 8 years and talking, isn't it?
So let me ask the staff this question, because I think we all are in agreement that we definitely need a financial plan, because I think there's been a question regarding the rate study and, you know, what was included and how much has been spent. I think certainly those are answers we're going to provide, and we really need to take a look at it. With originally $19 million, now we're estimating $23 million. I mean, that's a prudent thing to do. So I think the other thing is it's always good to have another set of eyes, and I think, Rick, you made a good point about these folks being part of the water purveyors. Look, we know that this is just a facility that right now deals with wastewater, but we've got a lot of folks in the community and ratepayers who have said, let's at least investigate if down the road, long term, if there's an opportunity to reuse water and take charge of our own water destiny. So I think if there's a way to do this and get a financial plan, the question would be, how long do you think it would take to be able to put together a financial plan and come back to this board?
Well, I guess I'd have to envision that the process would be the board would adopt a alternative for our approach, and then a financial plan would come after that. I won't know what to finance until I know what it is and the cost. So I would think that by the time you're done with that, you're 3 months away in the financial plan. But that doesn't mean that you can't move ahead with the design once you choose an alternative. We talk about a lot of things here, but one thing we don't talk about very much is that our rates are very low. So while a lot of people refer to me as a cheap guy, and the only lower rates are from the agency I was at before, but everybody, the next lowest rates to us were Templeton, which were about 50% more than our rates, other than Santa Maria's, which are still lower than ours. But the rates here compared to the rest of the region are very low. So while the rates are doubling over in 10 years, as you said, that still puts our rates fairly low. That doesn't mean it's not a concern.
Yes, because I don't think anyone up here is advocating to increase rates again. I mean, I think we just need to take a look and see where we are financially and what are some of the ways that we could potentially fund the base project, and then if there's an opportunity for the 1A.
And regardless of whoever you are or whatever, every 3 years you should probably review your financial plan and see if you're keeping up in it with a good spot. And we're getting to that time zone.
All right. So I think we're at a point where if someone wants to form a motion.
Mr. Chair, if I could be so bold. I would recommend approval of the basic project, which I think was number one, not 1A, right? Or is it one?
Number two.
Number one.
Number one. Approval of project one. With the proviso that the alternative that was also given tonight be sent to the member jurisdictions with the ability to comment and express their concerns or desires to this board, because ultimately this board is the decision-making body. I don't think we need an executive committee. I do think we need their input, and I think the cities, each city has the personnel and the cooperation between the member agencies outside this board to have those discussions amongst themselves and write letters to this board and let them know what their concerns are. But I do think if there's some urgency to move forward, if in fact the coastal permit is due in December. I mean, we'll probably end up having to get an extension, and that's a whole other thing. But if I just go on the facts I have in front of me, I would say we need to move forward now, work on design, work on funding, and work on this wish list that the cities want to deal with, you know, adding to the redundancy project. But we have to go forward with the basics. So I'm going off, but you got my motion, I think.
So, Tim, let me just clarify. So I, you know, pursue an option one or direction to pursue option one with the proviso on option 1A, not 2, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I think that's a really good motion.
Yeah. So that's my motion.
So very good. Then I will second that motion.
Thank you.
We're keeping notes here, trying to keep up. So
okay.
Is that pursue option one and gain input on further alternatives?
Well, you've already put, my idea is that you've already put the energy and effort into these other alternatives that you've already expressed to us that the cities have some desire to talk about, and I don't want to foreclose their ability to comment on those other options. So I want their comments in case it gives us information to somehow modify what my current motion is. But right now I want to go with the basic project. Does that make sense?
So I think we're looking for their comments on option 1A. I think I dubbed it option 1A as presented here tonight. And I think that makes sense. We can move forward with the base project, yet we're not moving out something in the future.
I have no problem with getting comments. I just, first blush is that it's too expensive, but I'm willing to hear what other parts of the agencies have.
I think that's reasonable. Okay, if there's no additional. Yeah.
Just to make sure that we have the motion correct, that would be proceed with option number one and seek comments from other agencies on option 1A.
Correct.
That is correct. Okay. We good. Let's do a roll call.
Director Brown.
Yes.
Director White.
Speaking for my board, which reviewed this report on Monday evening, no.
And Chairman Schultz.
Yes. Okay. Let's move to the next item, which is consideration of approval of a resolution approving an initial memorandum of understanding between the South San Luis Obispo County San Luis District and Service Employees International Union Local 620. Mr. Sweet, you have the floor.
Thank you. Chairman and members of the audience, tonight before us is the approval of the memorandum of understanding between Service Employees Union Local 620 and the Sanitation District. This was about 10 months in the creation, and the summary of the items that are critical to the decision-making process tonight are here in our options. There's a two-year term effective July of 2017 through June 2019. There's a 2.5% raise each of those years. There's a longevity pay. There's a cap on the district's contribution to health premiums and a shared cost for future increases. Cap on the district contribution to health premiums for current retirees, and a change to the district contribution for retiree health premiums for current employees. Those, I think, are the critical items the district has been negotiating tonight. I believe there, Susan Wells is here, who was very important in helping us negotiate this, along with members of SEIU, including Daryl Sheck, who's with SEIU. And we'd like to thank all of the members and our board for providing us direction and support on this issue. If there are any questions, we'll do our best to answer those for you.
Thank you for that staff report. Let me see if there's any questions. Karen, you have any questions?
No.
Tim?
No.
Neither do I.
Public input?
I do want to say thank you. It was a very, very nice staff report, and I know that a lot of work went into this. Let me open this up to the public and see if anyone would like to come forward and make comment.
Thank you, Chairman Schultz and directors. My name is Daryl Sheck, field representative for SEIU Local 620. And on behalf of our members, I want to thank the district board and its representatives for their hard work in facilitating the completion of an initial memorandum of understanding for our members of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Bargaining a first-run contract is never easy, Expectations can be difficult to manage for either party in attempting to, you know, to determine what is a, quote, fair contract. While an initial agreement may not be perfect for either side, it represents the collaborative effort that's taken place to agree to a contract that will work for both sides. Each side may not get what they truly want, but generally each side gets what they need. And I want to thank the board for the professionalism of all the members of the district bargaining team, and thank the board for the patience exercised to get to an agreement over the last few months. Collectively, everyone's worked very hard to get to where we are today, and I think we can all take pride in the finished agreement and the exemplary conduct of everyone involved to bring this to fruition. The first agreement is typically the toughest one to craft. We look forward in the years to come in building off this initial agreement and working together to address the challenges and also enjoy the successes that will inevitably occur at the district over the years. Our members, who are also your employees, thank you for your service to the community. And while a new memorandum of understanding, with a new memorandum of understanding, our members can continue to work for the betterment of the district and its citizens. And I want to thank you for your time today. I want to thank Mr. Sweet, and I want to thank Ms. Wells.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Shack. We appreciate that, and we appreciate the union working with our staff and representatives. Okay. Is there anyone else?
Item 29, retirement, looks like it changed a little bit too, from 2 to 2.5%. Am I correct there? As retirement,
oh,
it says
yes.
Required upgrade from 2 to 2.5%.
The employee carrying the additional cost of that.
The way it's written, it's hard to tell because there's a parenthesis there that doesn't have another parenthesis to start it, and it's written fairly poorly as far as I can read it. I really didn't understand what it was talking about. And the other thing I kind of wondered is that I know 2.5% in CalPERS is pretty much reserved for safety employees.
Safety employees are at 3%.
Well, it depends on where you're at. I'm so a safety employee, and I'm 2.5%.
Hang on a second, Mr. Johnson. Why don't you make your comments and then.
Oh, I am.
Well, I know. I don't want to back and forth.
Okay. Well,
so I didn't want him. I don't want staff using you at 3 minutes. So.
Yes. Anyway, I'm just saying that, I just couldn't understand what was going on there. But you're saying the extra 0.5% is taken up by the employees, it sounds like to me, which is fair. Okay. And like I said, I know that if you're a safety employee and you're a CHP, yeah, you get 3%. But at the other institutions, it's 2.5%, such as prisons and the state hospital safety employees at 2.5%, and so I think it's a little out of a little overboard.
Anyone else?
Julie Tacker, and this is a long time coming. About a year, a little more than a year. What I've said pretty much every time you went to closed session about it was you wouldn't be going to closed session about it. We wouldn't have gone through this exercise if it hadn't been for Gerhard Huebner. This is comes at a great cost. Legal time, human resource time. I'm not clear how much Alicia Lara also worked on this. I'd be curious if there's some of her time on this. But I was concerned when I was listening to watching an Oceano meeting where Ms. White reported that this had been signed, sealed, and delivered, her words, about 3 weeks ago. And so signed, sealed, and delivered is tonight. And so that was a little premature and maybe outside of closed session and probably shouldn't have been reported. So I'm glad it's over. I'm hopeful the employees are happy with it. I'm a little confused about the personnel policy manual and the changes that are coming up that you're going to talk about, in that the order it seems to me that the employees that are going through the MOU would also want to be in agreement with the personnel policy manual. And in my mind, you're going to be massaging that tonight, and you've already made a deal. So I think it's backwards.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public, bring it back to the board. Any additional discussion?
No, sir.
Anyone
nope.
prepared to make a motion?
I'd move for approval of the MOU.
Second.
There's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Director Brown?
Yes.
Director White?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to item 6C. This is the personnel policy manual updates. Mr. Sweet, you have the floor.
Before you tonight is the initial reading of the personnel policy manual. While we agree that what Ms. Tacker said is there may be some inconsistencies, the MOU will prevail, and we will have to adjust the personnel policy manual over this time to adjust to that. They're surprisingly close, in my opinion. So we're here to take input on the policy manual. The proposal would be to bring this back next week because the policy manual itself requires that there be at least an initial reading prior to adoption. So with that, it's of course extremely lengthy.
Yeah.
I will be glad to take input. That's the purpose of this meeting, is to take input on that and make changes as recommended.
Okay, thank you. Tim, you have any questions?
Just briefly, can you talk to me about where you got the standards from? You know, I'm assuming you didn't reinvent the wheel. So,
no. as you see, the personnel policy manual is based off the existing manual, and it's done with underlines and strike through. So the existing personnel manual started out as our basis for that. The changes were done by a HR consultant, Laura HR Consultants, and she did this work, addressing a question that came in the last one. Primarily Susan Wells worked on the MOU, and Alicia Lara worked on the PPM. And then we attempted to merge them, but there's still some minor differences. So that's where that came from. Alicia has 30-something years in personnel, and she did the majority of those changes.
And she's not here this evening?
No, she is not. She's out of town this evening.
Is it your understanding that this personnel manual is fairly routine compared to other sanitation districts?
This personnel manual is fairly routine compared to most public agencies in California.
Anything that strikes you comes out?
Odd or strange? I don't think so. I think you would probably find many of these items reflected in, for instance, the Aurora Grandier Grover Beach manual. There's some differences based on the type of benefits we have that would be different from you, but
right. I'm just talking about
that.
The framework in general. Yeah,
framework in general, I think you'd find fairly consistent with other agencies.
Thank you for that, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Karen.
Just appears most of it's mostly consistent with law.
Yes.
I mean that's the big thing, that it meets the requirements of the law.
Yes, and personnel is based on actual legislative law. And, of course, court law, court cases that dictate law. So you have both of those issues going on, and it's been a while since ours has been updated.
Okay. So, Rick, I have a few things. Under definitions, which is Section 2000, Items 6 and 7, when it talks about regular employees and part-time employees, the one it talks about a probationary period and works, and you can see in item 6, it says 30 to 40 hours per week. And then it goes down and talks about part-time employees and said they work 30 hours per week. So,
yeah, I think that was a standard that was established by CalPERS as a definition of who gets retirement and who doesn't. I'm certainly not an expert on that particular issue. In fact, I'm trying to find it right now. What section was that again?
So it's section 2000 under definitions, and it's on page 1. And really what I'm – it seems to be if you're talking about a regular employee, it's in working 30 to 40 hours a week, but then if you're a part-time employee, you're working 30 hours a week. And I don't know if there should say less than 30 hours a week or
30 hours
31.
A week or less.
Seems like we can certainly.
So maybe you take a look at
take a look at that.
Okay. And then under the nepotism section, which is section 2015, I was going all the way back to employee duty, which would be under that section.
What number of pages?
I know this is really
2015. Okay.
And it's page 5.
Okay.
And this is under, yeah, nepotism and fraternization.
Employee duty.
Yeah, so it says employees who are in a situation prohibited under this policy to immediately notify their supervisor. I don't know if that's just standard language or do we need to put a time frame on that, because I'm just curious on that. So maybe that's something
I think that's
further clarification on.
I've certainly seen that language before, but we can ask.
Okay. And then the reemployment pool, which is, I think, section 2030 regarding break in service. And this is on page 1. And this is number 4, dealing with the reemployment list. And it talks about having that list for 1 year. So maybe, again, maybe just some clarification on whether that is standard. I know that's obviously something that's already in our manual. I was just kind of curious as to what was dictating that be 1 year.
Yeah, that hasn't been changed.
Yeah. And then finally under travel, and this would be under hours of work and overtime. And I just want to get clarification. This is really talking about, I think before it had talked about any time used by employees traveling to and from seminars, conferences, or training sessions outside of regular working hours shall not be considered as time worked and shall not be used to compute overtime unless specifically authorized by the district administrator and or is designated. So that's being struck. So I guess now we're looking at that being, as long as it's approved, if it's mandatory schooling, that would their time traveling outside of work hours would be considered work time.
Work time. Yeah. I think that's a result of case law.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. And nice job bringing this forward. I know this has taken quite a bit of time and a while, and this is a very thick document as I read through this. So let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone who would like to make comment on this item.
There are a lot of pages. I'm glad you're going to bring it back. I wished you had taken it in sections and actually gone through it together. Because, first of all, in the staff report it says that the last full revision was 2005. I have a version of 2015, and it doesn't look like that's the last version that you've gone from. This, when I compared them, the strike-throughs now are things that aren't in that 2015 document. So I don't know that everything was caught. And one of the things, and I'm having trouble finding it right this minute, it has to do with grievances or disciplinary procedures, as I recall. But I can't find the exact language. If someone else sees it, it has to do with if there's a complaint and you take it, and you need to take it to your district administrator.
Yes.
If it's about the district administrator, you are to take it to the chair or the chair's designee. And I think that is hugely problematic. Number one, it's in conflict with your bylaws. Your bylaws say that the directors act as a unit. So one board member is not who an employee needs to go to when he has a complaint. And the idea that that's even a possibility kind of blows my mind after what we've all been through with the idea that a board member is overstepping his bounds by having conversations with employees. So that, I think, needs to be changed. And I went through and searched, and it's in this document several times. And there's government code that speaks to board members. It's a violation of law if they are meddling in personnel matters. So this needs some work. Your board needs to come to a decision about what is the process if an employee has a complaint against the district administrator. And I thought that it was that they write a complaint or write a grievance to the board. And that's when you all go into closed session, consider the grievance, consider the complaint, and then you come out with something. But you don't go to one board member, and the chair has no more power than any one of the directors. So I think that is flawed in this document. With regard to the nepotism policy, I just think it's really overreaching. These people can't date. They can't, you know, even if they went out for a cup of coffee, it could be misconstrued as a date, and then they could maybe lose their job or be demoted or move to another office or cubicle or whatever. I just think you're maybe infringing on their rights with regard to nepotism. I think it could be misconstrued. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
I'm Chris McDurin, and I would like to recommend that the personnel policy be reviewed over at least two board meetings, and I'm not sure if that's what was agreed on here or if we were going to come back, but I think it's really important with a document that volume that it takes more than a few days to really thoroughly review it, and it would really benefit the employees, the board, and the ratepayer to just carefully look at it. For example, if you look at the bookkeeper secretary employment standards under education, the manual states equivalent to graduation from high school, and then it adds an alternate qualification or GED supplemented by 30 units of college-level coursework in accounting. Well, first, you must be clear on whether they're semester hours or quarter hours, because it makes a really big difference. And secondly, I'm not sure why 30 units was determined or selected, because an associate's degree takes 60 units complete, and that's over half of that course load. So this is really, the 30 semester units is really closer to a bachelor's degree. And I think it's really important that you make those requirements very clear in your manual to avoid any kind of misinterpretation of what it means. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? So let me close it to the public. And Ms. Victorine, yes, it's introduced to the board. We're giving some comments and direction, and it will come back again. So we would encourage. Yeah. Yes. Okay. The other thing I did want to have staff clarify is there actually is a grievance section in here. It's section 5010, and it does, it's a little more clear, and it eliminates some of that coming to the board and doing this in public. And I think maybe you can just touch on that or remember just a little bit.
Oh, right now?
Yeah. No. I mean, just you know.
I think one of the things that, in my understanding, and not having been here during this, there was an issue where grievances were going to be discussed in open session before the board, which is extremely uncommon. Yeah. And that is something that has been changed so that it's not, it occurs under more administrative setting.
Yes, okay.
More consistent with probably what all your agencies do, actually.
So the change has been made. I think it addresses some of the concerns that we've had in the past. So I think those who have a chance to review it, when this is brought back to us, we would love your input prior to.
Yeah, one interesting point that Ms. Tacker brought up was regarding the district administrator. There's a complaint about the district administrator. What's difference between a regular employee and a district administrator is the district administrator is an employee of the board. So the board members do have some control over the district administrator. A single board member, that's not true.
That's correct.
But somebody to record a complaint is not an action. So that is something that that's a difference between some of the discussions we've had in the past about whether or not an employee should approach the board.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. So this is just an item that is brought to the board for review of the draft, some direction, and then it will be brought back at a meeting. And Rick, are you anticipating this coming back to us in the December board meeting or one of the December board meetings?
Yes, we would anticipate trying to bring it back next board meeting. We'll look at the comments and see if we can, in fact, incorporate those in that amount of time.
Okay, and then I would suggest if there's anyone from the community that wanted to provide comments that they can contact you or Paul, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Do you mind if I ask some questions?
Sure.
I just have a couple process questions for clarity. I think I understand, but I want to double check. When this item was first introduced, it talked about a first reading of an ordinance. And you can't really do a first reading of an ordinance that is going to be modified. So I'm assuming what you really mean is the first look at this, and then once it's nailed down, then we'll do the first reading.
That's a good question. I mean, I would think if it's an ordinance, I would think the first reading would actually be next time, and I got to check into that. So
yeah, you can't do a first reading and then have changes and do it as a second reading. You have to start all over.
Correct. So next time would be when that would be brought to the board if it's a first reading, and then a second reading, which is usually perfunctory, not always.
No, I understand.
Would be the following meeting.
I heard it seemed to sound like this was going to be the first reading, and I wanted to clarify that. And then secondly, the thing that concerned me is the comment from the public that you might have gone off the wrong most recent version of the personnel manual. So if you could just clarify that for me and whether it makes a huge difference one way or the other.
Yeah, I have to say I'm not familiar with that because I wasn't. So, we'll take a look at that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Those are my comments. Questions?
Okay. So there actually is not an ordinance with this. So for tonight, at least, and this is just giving you some direction on this because the legal counsel has not weighed in on how this would be adopted. So do we need a formal motion on this? Or
I don't think so. We there's no resolution.
Can I ask one other question?
Yes.
I apologize. Given that it's a personnel manual, I'm so used to working on city council stuff. Does this really need a first and second reading?
I don't know that it really requires an ordinance, so that is a question I'm going to take back.
Well, I think that's a question for legal counsel, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just putting it out there. It seems to me I kind of went from the wrong premise that it was, because I'm so used to introducing ordinances, and I think I might have got that wrong, so I want to make sure that we are all on the same page in terms of what process is.
Wouldn't it be an ordinance?
No, it's not.
Mr. Chair, Director Brown, if we do proceed with an ordinance, there will be a first and a second reading, and the law does require that the ordinance from the first reading match the ordinance for the second reading. And what Mr. Sweet's going to do is go back, look in the annals of the district, because it's been a while, to see what procedure the district has followed before. And a lot of times there's a choice whether you can proceed by resolution or ordinance. And it may have to do more with how you want to keep your bookkeeping and files and records than what you have to do. And so it may be a matter of what we've done in the past and keeping consistent. So he's going to check on that.
Thank you. Because if it was done by ordinance in the past, we need to change the ordinance to move forward.
No, I understand. I don't know that info. I needed some clarity. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to we'll move on. This is item 60, technical consultants and the plan operations report. Mr. Sweet.
Thank you, Chairman Schultz and members of the audience. The report before you tonight talks about the conclusion of the Cherry Avenue Arroyo Grande Sewer Bridge project. Talks a little bit about what we heard tonight on the redundancy project. The status of the operation, the headworks project, which we have the material on site now and hopefully will be installed next week to correct the operations issues we've had with the new installation. It talks a little bit about the centrifuge repair that we have of the district centrifuge. We have a rental centrifuge on site right now, and also about the digester number one and where we are on that. The digester is completely cleaned out. There's a structural evaluation that's underway. They've taken cores of the concrete, and we're waiting to get the results of those corings. We do know we have to recoat the interior of the digester, and we'll be letting you know how much that is as soon as we issue bids for that. And the rest, remainder of it remains pretty much as we had before. We did do an executive committee update where we talked about we're recommending that an executive committee review the redundancy report. Of course, we are the redundancy project options. And that's not that inconsistent with what we heard as the resolution tonight. And then upcoming agenda items, the fiscal year end financial report, which we believe will an issue we had with the so-called $800,000 is that it didn't really wasn't based on year-end books. So it's kind of like your checkbook. How much money do you have in the bank? You can't look at how many checks I can write. You can't really look at your balance right then because there's checks that's clear. There's checks to have cleared. There's deposits that haven't been posted yet. So what we're trying to do is do a year-end report, which should be done. And it's what every city and district does. And that's where you set your closure date and you then look at how everything has accrued or been paid up to that date. So we believe that that will offer you a better financial picture of what's going on. Also, the fiscal year audit, we're trying to wrap up and get before you at the next meeting. And the adoption of the personnel policy manual, which we initially reviewed this evening. So that's the conclusion of that report. If there's anything else, I'll certainly be glad to address this.
Thank you for that report. Any questions of Mr. Sweet?
No, thank you.
Nope.
No? Let me open this up to the public. Any one want to comment on this item?
Julie Tacker, and I see that we have a fourth plant superintendent this year. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I would just like an explanation of how we've gotten to a third interim plant superintendent and maybe the strengths and weaknesses of which ones and why Mr. Jackman is the plant superintendent now. I did see a man in the back of the room in a blue shirt with his name Rick on the shirt. And in the past, you've had your superintendent sit up here and give the actual technical report associated with plant operations. And I missed that because we learned a lot from that. And one of the things that I learned from that over many years now. You know, I've been coming to these meetings since 2009. I live in Los Osos. I care about your district. The FFR, fixed film reactor, looks like a coliseum. When the Kennedy Jenks guy suggested that you no longer use it, I kind of winced, thinking that's a big, beautiful concrete structure that could be repurposed into an amphitheater or something else. But one of the things that I heard in the many, many reports over the years from Barlaggio, from Clemens, was that it's been running for 30-some years without really ever being turned off, and that the actual gearbox, and of course I don't know the names of any of these gizmos, but the gearbox in the middle is going to break, and there's another one downstairs underneath it waiting to be put in should it break. Mm-hmm. But when it breaks, it's going to take 24/7 for 3 or 4 days of all hands on deck to replace that. And you're not going to be treating your wastewater to the level that it needs to be treated, and you will be spilling and you will get a fine. Something that Mr. Clemens and I can't remember which engineer, Jim Gehring, worked on was a backup plan for the fixed film reactor, and there was a film made to show the public how that backup plan worked. And it never was shown to us. I would love to see it. Maybe call me crazy. But I'd like to see how that works, so that when it breaks, not if, because it's gonna, when it breaks, how the backup plan, will it be able to treat the water to some level to keep you out of hot water with the regional board. So I'd like to see that come back. Of course, more explanation on the money. That's always a good one. So thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. And close the public hearing. Back to the board. Okay. This is a receiving file. Anything else? Okay.
Nope.
Okay. So Rick, I have a question. I think we received a item earlier that was item 6E, but I don't see it on, unless there was an updated agenda.
Yes, there was an updated agenda. That it was posted Saturday afternoon late, and let me.
Okay.
6E,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And legal counsel, we're good with the timing of this posted revised agenda.
No, but it might be sitting at home.
Cool.
I think something was delivered, I know.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Then let's move on to item 6E. This is employer contribution under the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act with CalPERS. Mr. Sweet?
So I apologize the way this occurred and the fact that we have an item that wasn't in our original packet. It has everything to do with meeting the goals of the district regarding our MOU negotiations, and with the successful MOU negotiations, we had to figure out a way to implement those.
Okay.
That meant we have to make a change in agreement with CalPERS to what's called the equal process, and it allows us, what we're trying to do here is we will be paying the employees for their health care instead of CalPERS for their health care. That allows us to pay retirees in whichever method the MOU specifies. The MOU, the way the MOU was crafted, is not consistent with how PERS would allow it to be handled through PERS. So we are doing this outside of PERS management of the health care. They'll still be buying PERS health care. The only difference is instead of us paying PERS, we would be reimbursing the employees for paying PERS. That's the primary way. We'll be bringing another item before you to talk about formation of a health care savings account in which this will be, which will be the function in which this occurs. And I think that at this point, the employees are aware and okay with it. It provides them some additional options anyway. So it's it was just I'm sorry that it happened so had to happen this way, but CalPERS has some very distinct time frames, and we had to get this before you tonight. So that's okay. Where we are on that.
Will you at least just cover the fiscal consideration section, even if you need to read that section for folks who haven't had the benefit of seeing the staff report?
The change will reduce future liabilities with regard to health care costs for employees and retirees. Initially, the cost savings may appear modest, but however, the change in health contributions secure a more sustainable district contribution in the years to come. So as we had a discussion on the MOU, what is happening is we're halting the retirees' health care at 85% of the current contribution. And it was scheduled to go to 90% at January 1st. And our employees have agreed to split future cost increase on health care with us. It's those differences. Oh, and future employees will receive the PEMCA minimum for retiree health care, which at this point is 128, I know, because I get that's what I get is the minimum. So that will, in the long term, save the district a great deal of money and help us from absorbing solely the health care cost increases.
Great. Thank you. So there's any questions? Karen, you have any questions?
No.
Okay. All right. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone from the community who would like to address this item? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close it. And I'm looking for a motion on this item.
Move for approval.
Second.
There's a motion. There's a second. Sue, roll call.
Yes. Director Brown.
Yes.
Director White.
Yes.
Chairman Schultz.
Yes. All right. Board member communications. Tim, you have anything?
No.
Okay. Karen?
No.
The one thing I do have, and I think we appreciate the staff reaching out to the city managers and the district manager, but it was accurately noted tonight that that was an idea that was put out, and so I don't know if maybe we give some direction to say on a future agenda, maybe bring that item back. Let's formalize this executive committee, because we had brought it out. I know some members of the community who had said, hey, we're open to this for if it's just advice to the district administrator, not the plant superintendent. So I think we just need to have a more formal discussion around it. I can tell you with the South County Transit, they actually do have an executive committee, and it is constituted as we've constituted this one. And I know there's some value, and I think ultimately it's just, they just make their advisory, and board makes the final decision. But I think we need to formalize that.
Okay.
So I would just say a lot of good things.
Yeah. Go ahead. Do you need two board members to get that on the next agenda?
Yeah, I guess maybe. So do we have a?
So I'll agree to that. I don't know if you need to, but.
Okay. So maybe let's get it on an agenda, but look at workload and see when you can bring that back. Sound good? Okay.
Since we have a second, I do have a question.
Okay.
How are we moving forward on searching for a new?
The.
Yep.
Manager.
You provided comments at the last meeting regarding the brochure issues. Those comments have been forwarded to the recruiter, and the recruiter will be perhaps calling each of you to make sure she understands that. We will be bringing a contract back to you at, I believe, the next board meeting for you to pay for the expenses associated with the project. As you recall, they're going to do the recruitment as part of their guarantee, but they still will want the their expenses reimbursed, which are estimated about $5,000 to $6,000 at this time. So she wanted a contract for that. Imagine that. Okay. So we'll be bringing that back, and she'll be asking the questions about the brochure.
Okay, very good. And that was my second thing, so thanks for asking. Very good. Okay, so we do not have any closed session items tonight, and so with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
I have to sign warrants.
Yeah, I guess we do.
Sorry about that.